Mr. Secretary, can you please call the roll?
Allen, Archuleta, Atkins, Bates, Bell, Borges, Bradford, Caballero, Chang, Dodd, Durazo, Galgioni, Glazer, Grove, Hertzberg, Hill, Hueso, Hurtado, Jackson, Jones, Leyva, McGuire, Mitchell, Monning, Morlock, Morrell, Nielsen, Pan, Portantino, Roth, Rubio, Skinner, Stern, Stone, Umberg, Wykowski, Wiener, Wilk.
Good morning, Senators. A quorum is present. Would the members and our guests be on the rail and in the gallery please rise? We're going to be led in prayer this morning by our chaplain, Sister Michelle Gorman, after which we're going to ask that all remain standing. We're going to be led in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag by Senator Hill.
Let us center ourselves in God's presence. This is a prayer of St. Teresa of Avila. Dear God, remember that we are the plants in your fields, so connected to the earth that you know what would happen if you did not rain upon us. And if your light ceased to lift us from the ground and craft our bodies, how might we come near you like the suns? Please remember, God, to love us in a way our souls can taste and rejoice in. Amen.
Please join me in the pledge to our flag.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Members, we're advancing to privileges of the floor. Senator Skinner has some very special guests that she'd like to be able to introduce. Senator Skinner will be presenting at the Pro Tem's desk. Good morning, Senator Skinner. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. President and colleagues. I invite you to join me in welcoming our delegation from Canada. Each year, a delegation of Canadian diplomats visit Sacramento to highlight the importance of our Canadian and California relationship. The data speaks clearly and convincingly. Canada is California's second largest trading partner, with over $45 billion in goods traded annually. Over 1.2 million jobs in California depend on the trade and investment with Canada. California is visited by over 2 million Canadians every year who spend about $1.5 billion in their travels here. Maybe the most fun statistic is that Canadians buy our wines. They are the single largest purchaser of California wines, with the average spending of over $400 million every year. Now, to celebrate this vital relationship, we welcome Consul General of Canada in San Francisco, Mr. Rana Sarkar, who is participating in his second day, Canada Day, here at the Capitol. Mr. Sarkar and his newly appointed counterpart in Los Angeles, Mr. Zaib Sheikh, who is unfortunately unable to join us today, were personally handpicked by Prime Minister Trudeau in recognition of the growing importance of the California-Canada relationship in this moment of global change. Both are new diplomats, but not new to diplomacy. So they've both had successful careers in tech, global business, government, and international entertainment. So Canada is one of the world's most welcoming destinations for immigration. More than one out of every five Canadian residents are foreign-born. And Canada is often held up as a model for how to craft smart immigration policy and promote integrated multiculturalism. The Trudeau government has committed to diversity as a Canadian strength, with shared universal values crucial to overcoming barriers to inclusion, in fact making it a cornerstone of Canada's economic strategy. The appointment of both these council generals, who come from foreign-born families, is a perfect example of this approach. Today, we take a moment to recognize the significant economic and cultural relationships between our two regions, and we look forward to our continued collaboration and strengthening our long-standing bond. So please join me in extending a warm California Senate welcome to our Canadian guests.
Ladies and gentlemen of the California State Senate, let's welcome some of our closest allies to the Senate chambers. At this time, we'd like to welcome the Canadian delegation and all interested senators to be able to take an official photo at the back of the Senate chambers.
That'd be nice.
Members, we'd like to turn our attention back to Senator Skinner at the Pro Tem's desk.
Thank you, colleagues. I want to welcome Albany Girl Scout Troop number 33990 in the gallery. Senators, give them a warm welcome.
Ladies and gentlemen of the California State Senate, let's give the Girl Scout Troop.
Our young women from this troop are working with homeless folks who live in around their area. They've donated items for them. They've written postcards to all of us, hoping that we will work on solutions. Thank you, Girl Scout Troop number 3390. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Senator Skinner, and we hope that they brought samples of Thin Mints for every member of the Senate today. We welcome you to the California State Senate. Thank you. Members, without objection, we're going to move to Senate third reading and focus on SB 126, file item number 2. Senator Leyva?
Yes.
Senator Leyva is prepared to take this item up. Mr. Secretary, can you please read?
Senate Bill 126 by Senator Leyva, an act relating to charter schools.
Senator Leyva, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good morning, members. SB 126 ensures that charter schools comply with the same transparency and accountability laws that all of our other public schools currently follow. As you know, the governor recently called for swift action to resolve ongoing charter school transparency issues. While charter schools are unique in many ways, they are publicly funded, and yet they lack the same transparency and accountability requirements that govern other publicly funded educational institutions. Under this bill, charter school governing boards will be required to comply with the same open meeting, conflict of interest, and disclosure laws as traditional public school boards. This bill will also ensure that members of charter school governing boards cannot use their positions for personal or political gain. For several years, the legislature has attempted to bring clarity to this issue. Fortunately, our Attorney General recently published an opinion clearly stating that, yes, these good government laws do apply to charter schools. While the Attorney General's opinion provides much-needed clarity on whether or not these laws apply to charter school governing boards, the opinion is not legally binding. Absent the measure before you today, which codifies the Attorney General's opinion, disputes will continue to happen across the state over how these laws actually apply to charter schools. Members, SB 126 reflects our bicameral response to the governor's call for action. This bill is supported by teachers, school board members, labor, and civil rights organizations. The California Charter Schools Association is neutral on this bill. I respectfully request an aye vote.
Thank you, Senator Leyva. Members, we're going to open it up for discussion or debate. Senator Glazer. Good morning, sir.
Thank you, Madam, Mr. President. And members, I rise also in favor of this legislation. I want to thank the senator from Chino, her counterpart in the assembly, the assembly member from Long Beach, Governor Newsom, and the stakeholders who worked hard on this issue over the last few weeks. This is an issue that Senator from Santa Monica and I have worked on for a number of years. It is true that charter schools receive public dollars, and they should be under obligation provide the same public disclosure, open meeting requirements that our other schools that are funded by the public must undertake. I would note a couple things about this legislation. One is it does provide an exception to the rule on conflict by allowing teachers to participate in charter school boards, and I think that's a healthy addition to governance. We've done something similar at our university system by allowing faculty members to serve on our governing boards there. Secondly, the legislation has a point of sensitivity in regard to charter schools that are on tribal lands, and I appreciate the author's work to ensure that we recognize the special status of a charter school. I think there's just one on tribal lands. You know, in this space, members, it's been a lot of contentiousness and controversy, a lot of rhetoric, and I'm happy to see the parties come together and finding common ground on this legislation. I know that there are other issues in this space that continue to be points of contention. I appreciate Governor Newsom's request to the superintendent to form a task force to deal with some of the important issues regarding charter schools, and that work will happen through the course of this year. It's my hope that the work that we do today, the passage of this legislation, and the work that's going to go ongoing with the superintendent and the governor will allow for some level of peace to reign in our land on these issues over the course of this year, and that this legislation is a good start. It's found common ground. It has a balance to it, and I hope that that can set the right tone as the author said it during the committee hearing, set the right tone for the year, and I thank her for her leadership on this.
Thank you. We'd like to be able to continue with discussion or debate. We'll go first to Senator Morlock and then to Senator Allen. Senator Morlock, the floor is yours, sir. Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to address SB 126 from three different perspectives. The first is I believe in no better and no worse. If a public school district board must follow the requirements elaborated in the bill, then charter schools should too. Two, California has 944 school districts. A third of them, as of June 30, 2017, have been managed prudently, reflecting positive net unrestricted assets. The others are at various stages of fiscal distress. Yet as seen recently with LA Unified School District, teachers still feel underpaid and thus underappreciated, and they would still like to have more nurses and counselors, all good requests, understood. But where will the funding come from? Obviously, Prop 98 is not cutting it. Should the governor and the legislature reposition some of the $21 billion surplus we're talking about in our budget, maybe we could provide some help for our schools on top of the significant CalSTRS contribution that the governor is proposing. The fiscal strains are showing, and this week, Oakland Unified School District is ready to go on strike. So third, we're complaining about a lot of things, and in my part of the state, listening to the news. Apparently, the fall guy seems to be charter schools. Everybody's pointing at that in a special committee. And I think you have to look past a lot of other culprits like pensions. And in the case of LA Unified School District, retiree medical liabilities, they just published their June 30, 2018 comprehensive annual financial report and had to reflect $15 billion of unfunded retiree medical. That's more than $24,000 per student. But more is amiss. You would not see charter schools if school districts were providing great educations for students of parents at every income strata. Parents are telling us something is wrong, and they're voting with their feet, and they're waiting in long lines to get into a charter school. So we are seeing a symptom of bigger concerns, Mr. President. Consequently, tightening the screws on charter schools may be a misdirected and unfair legislative solution. The legislature needs to take a hard look at the facts and not come to the wrong conclusions. Governor Brown even started two charter schools and supports them in Oakland. The smart money in LA supports charter schools. Maybe it's time to reevaluate. Maybe this legislature should reevaluate what we're doing with Prop 98, with pension benefits going forward, with retiree medical benefit formulas, and with school district funding allocations. That should make establishing charter schools financially seamless and unnoticed to their budgets. Colleagues, I want to support a bill that addresses the deep systematic currents that are hurting our school districts. SB 126 is a Band-Aid when major surgery is needed. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Morlock. We're now going to turn the floor over to Senator Allen, then we'll go to Senator Jackson. Senator Allen.
Well, members, I want to commend the authors, and I want to particularly associate myself with the comments made by the senator from Orinda. You know, behind so many of these bills is oftentimes incredible amount of staff work. And I just want to take a moment, having worked on this issue for quite some time, to recognize the work of two very extraordinary staffers whose work underpins several aspects of this bill. One of them from my own personal staff, Jennifer Chase, and then from the Education Committee staff, Ian Johnson, who's still there and worked with me very closely when I was the Education Chair. Two really extraordinary public servants. Our staff oftentimes are not adequately recognized, and so much of their work is present in aspects of this bill. They are true public servants, and I want to recognize them.
Thank you, sir. Senator Jackson, the floor is yours.
Yes, good morning. Thank you, Mr. President, colleagues. I want to return us back to what this bill is, not what it isn't. And it's a very important bill, and I appreciate and know that there has been a lot of hard work done in this. The bill has appeared before the Senate Judiciary Committee for a number of years, and efforts have been made to really try to address what this bill is all about. It is about transparency and accountability. So charter schools receive enormous amount of taxpayer dollars, and they're charged with educating our children, a responsible task and a reasonable one. But there needs to be sunshine in all publicly funded schools and their governing bodies, and that is what this bill calls for. And I am pleased that the California Attorney General recently published an opinion that was consistent with the opinion of our legislative council that our state's robust sunshine laws apply to all charter schools. That's what this bill is about. And it's critically important because the public is not only entitled, but they deserve to know where our money is going and how it is being spent, particularly in the pursuit of educating our children. So I am pleased that this bill codifies once and for all that the Public Records Act, Open Meeting Laws, Political Reform Act, and Government Code Section 1090 apply to charter schools. That is this bill. And with that, I urge your aye vote.
Members, we're under discussion or debate. Senator Borges.
Mr. President, may I pose a question to the maker of this agenda item?
Senator Leyva, will you accept a question from Senator Borges?
I would love a question.
Senator Borges, please proceed.
Thank you very much. I wanted to extend my appreciation for bringing this issue up for discussion. By way of background, as an educator, I do fully appreciate the importance of the Brown Act when it comes to publicly funded institutions. I think it's important that if public institutions in the traditional sense are bound by the requirements of the Brown Act, so too should charter schools, in my opinion. So I think that is very clear, in my opinion. One of the points brought up by one of my colleagues is, are we imposing additional requirements on charter schools by virtue of this teleconference requirement that doesn't exist with traditional public schools. Can you explain that further?
I certainly can. As we talked earlier this morning when you asked me the same question, I said the reason we're doing that is because with charter schools, they may have locations up and down the state and in other areas. In a school district, the schools are within that district. So many school districts move the locations and the meetings around so that it's accessible for everyone. If I have a charter school and it's here in Sacramento and I have another one that's in Chino and another one that's in San Diego, in order to make it accessible for everyone, having the teleconference is a way to let everyone participate.
And do we have an anticipated cost estimate for the new teleconferencing requirements, the two-way teleconferencing for all events?
I do not.
Okay. Were there any other committees that this would normally be referred to that were not in this instance?
I have no idea. I appeared before the committees that rules said I needed to appear before.
Got it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Members, under discussion or debate, last call, discussion or debate on the floor. Hearing and seeing none, Senator Leyva, would you like to close, please?
I would. Thank you, Mr. President. Members, I thank you, those of you, for your support on this bill, those who spoke in support. I appreciate the questions. And I did want to lay to rest some of the issues that the senator from Orange County brought up. This is a bill that is not fiscal at all. It's only about transparency, and it in no way inhibits the growth of charter schools. Members, I respectfully ask for an aye vote.
Mr. Secretary, can you please call the roll?
Allen. Aye. Archuleta.
Aye.
Aye. Atkins.
Aye.
Aye. Bates. Bell.
Aye.
Aye. Borges.
Aye.
Aye. Bradford.
Aye.
Aye. Caballero.
Aye.
Aye. Chang.
Aye.
Aye. Dodd.
Aye.
Aye. Durazo.
Aye.
Aye. Galgioni.
Aye.
Aye. Glazer.
Aye.
Aye. Grove.
Aye.
Hertzberg.
Aye.
Aye. Hill.
Aye.
Aye. Hueso.
Aye.
Aye. Hurtado.
Aye.
Jackson.
Aye.
Aye. Jones.
No.
No. Leyva.
Aye.
Aye. McGuire.
Aye.
Aye. Mitchell.
Aye.
Aye. Monning.
Aye.
Aye. Morlock. Morrell.
No.
No. Nilsson.
Aye.
Aye. Pan.
Aye.
Aye. Porchettino.
Aye.
Aye. Roth.
Aye.
Aye. Rubio.
Aye.
Aye. Skinner.
Aye.
Aye. Stern.
Stone.
Aye. Aye. Umberg.
Aye.
Aye. Wachowski.
Aye.
Wiener.
Aye.
Wilk.
Aye.
Aye.
Mr. Secretary, can you please call the absent members?
Bates.
Aye.
Aye. Morlock. Stern.
Ayes 34, noes 2. The measure passes. Can we please have immediate transmittal of the bill to the Assembly? Members, we're now going to be moving forward for messages from the governor. Those will be deemed read. Messages from the Assembly will be deemed read, reports of committee will be deemed read, and amendments adopted. Under motions, resolutions, and notices, senators, without objection, the Senate journals for February 19th through the 21st, 2019, will be approved and corrected by the Minute Clerk. Senators, we're advancing to introduction and first reading of bills. Mr. Secretary, can you please read?
Senate Bill 417, 418, 419, 420, 421, 422, 423.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Bills will be deemed read. We're now going to be moving forward with the consideration of the daily file. Members, we're moving with file item number 1. Mr. Secretary, can you please read?
Assembly Bill 149.
Thank you so much. Mr. Secretary, we're now moving on to file item number 3. Senator Dodd, are you prepared to take up? Senator Dodd is prepared to take up. Mr. Secretary, can you please read?
Senate Concurrent Resolution 14 by Senator Dodd relative to Eating Disorders Awareness Week.
Good morning, Senator Dodd. The floor is yours, sir.
Mr. President, members, SCR 14 recognizes the week of February 25th, 2019 to March 3rd, 2019 as Eating Disorders Awareness Week. In the United States, 30 million individuals suffer from clinically significant eating disorders at some time in their lives. These disorders affect men and women across all backgrounds and include anorexia nervosa, bulimia nervosa, and binge eating disorder. Colleagues, I got to tell you, I've seen firsthand how painful and difficult these disorders can be. I've had a loved one who suffered from an eating disorder. I've also seen that recovery is possible, so that is very, very positive. I joined to attest to the importance of awareness in understanding a strong support network for those on a journey to recovery is. National Eating Disorders Awareness Week is a collaborative effort by eating disorder professionals, healthcare providers, student educators, social workers, and individuals to raise awareness of the dangers surrounding eating disorders and the critical need for early intervention and treatment access. This resolution serves to further the conversation around eating disorders, to shine the light on these deadly illnesses, dispel misinformation, and connect people with the support they need in recovery. I respectfully ask for your aye vote.
Thank you, Senator Dodd. Members, discussion or debate on the floor? Last call for discussion or debate on the floor. Hearing and seeing none, Mr. Secretary, can you please call the roll?
Allen?
Aye.
Aye. Archuleta?
Aye.
Aye. Atkins?
Aye.
Aye. Bates?
Aye.
Bell?
Aye.
Aye. Borges?
Aye.
Bradford?
Aye.
Aye. Caballero?
Aye.
Cheng?
Aye.
Aye. Dodd?
Aye.
Durazo?
Aye.
Galgioni?
Aye.
Glazer?
Aye.
Grove?
Aye.
Hertzberg?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Aye. Wesso?
Aye.
Aye. Hurtado?
Aye.
Jackson?
Aye.
Jones?
Aye.
Aye. Leyva?
Aye.
Aye. McGuire?
Aye.
Aye. Mitchell?
Aye.
Monning?
Aye.
Aye. Morlock?
Aye.
Aye. Morrell?
Aye.
Aye. Nilsson?
Aye.
Aye. Pan?
Aye.
Aye. Portantino?
Aye.
Aye. Roth?
Aye.
Aye. Rubio?
Aye.
Aye. Skinner?
Aye.
Stern? Stone?
Aye.
Umberg?
Aye.
Wachowski?
Aye.
Wiener?
Aye.
Wilk?
Aye.
Ayes 37, no 0. The resolution is adopted. Senators, we're advancing to and returning to motions and resolutions. This is the time for adjourn and memories. We have four that have been advanced to the pro tem's office and the majority leader's office. We're going to start with Senator Galgioni. Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I rise to adjourn in the memory of Todd Summers, who was an activist in the San Joaquin County community since I was 21 years old when I first met him. He was a former president of the NAACP from 1986 to 1992. After attending college, he joined the United States Air Force during the Korean War before being honorably discharged in 1955. He also served on the San Joaquin County Board of Education. He leaves behind his wife of 31 years, two sisters, four children, four stepchildren, 19 grandchildren, and two great-grandchildren. I ask that the Senate please adjourn in his memory.
Senator Galgioni, thank you for advancing that. Please pass on our deep condolences to the family. Members, we'd like to turn the floor over to Majority Leader Hertzberg. Senator Hertzberg.
Thank you very much. Mr. President, I arise today with a heavy heart that to commemorate the life of the legendary Dodger pitcher and longtime resident of communities I represent, Don Newcomb. I didn't know him, but I suspect a lot of folks here on this floor knew of him or knew him. 2 days ago, on February 19th, he passed away at the age of 92. Don Newcomb, as many know, was one of the greatest pitchers in Dodger history. Over his 10-year career in the major leagues, he recorded 149 wins, 1,129 strikeouts, 24 shutouts, with in a total of 2,154 innings pitched. But he was an extraordinary trailblazer, Mr. Newcomb. In 1949, he was signed by the Brooklyn Dodgers and became the third African-American pitcher in the major leagues. That year, he was among the first four African-American players ever to be named and also to the All-Star team, along with Jackie Robinson, Roy Campanella, and Larry Doby. In 56, at the pinnacle of his career, he won both the Cy Young Award and the National League MVP Award, and held an impressive record of 27 wins, 7 losses. After his retirement, Mr. Newcomb remained deeply involved in the Dodger organization as a director of community affairs and an advisor to the team's chairman, and remained an avid fan. Rarely did he miss a game that the Dodgers were beating the Giants, or whatever they were. I'm not, you could tell I'm not much of a sports fan, but I got great people living in the community I represent. But before he passed, I just want to share one final thought. Don had a conversation with an LA Times reporter, and in that conversation, he said, "I remember Jackie Robinson calling me and Roy together after we first signed with the Dodgers." Don said, "Jackie said that people were going to hate us and abuse us, and by changing one letter in a word, we can make a difference." He paused for a moment and said, "Bitter. Just change the I to E," Jackie said. "And we should fight to be better, not bitter." And sure enough, that's what happened. Don Newcomb is survived by his wife, Karen, three children, Don Jr., Kelly, and Brett, two grandchildren, Cayman and Ryan. Members, please join me in adjourning in the memory of the baseball legend and American hero, Don Newcomb.
Thank you so much, Mr. Majority Leader. Senator Bradford, on this item, sir.
Yes, Mr. President, I join my colleague from the San Fernando Valley in adjourning in the memory of Don Newcomb, an individual that I did know, individual that a friendship was developed not through baseball, but through golf. We shared many rounds of golf at Chester Washington Golf Course, and he was a giant of a man, but more so a gentleman in all aspects. I always referred to him as Mr. Newcomb, and he'd always say, "Call me Don or the Big Nuke," but I was always Mr. Newcomb to me. But he shared more about life than anything else. And here's an individual who should be in the Hall of Fame, but if not for his substance abuse that he didn't run from, that prevented him from going to the Hall of Fame. A career, as Senator Hertzberg stated, that was only 10 years in the making. Two of those were interrupted for military service. And once returning back from military service, he was quite upset at the fact that he still could not stay in the hotels with his white colleagues. And so he and Jackie Robinson and Roy Campanello decided one day, "We're going to get off the bus and we're going into this white hotel and we're going to stay here." And the manager came down and he says, "You can stay here as long as you don't swim in the pool." But he was a trailblazer in civil rights in many ways. Dr. Martin Luther King had a conversation shortly before his assassination, and he thanked Don Newcomb. He says, "You've made my journey in civil rights and equality that much easier by what you did in baseball." Baseball was an opportunity to bring folks together, and Martin Luther King appreciated his contributions there. Mr. Newcomb spent the last 54 years of his life helping other individuals, whether they were in sports, entertainment industry, or just regular everyday folks, deal with substance abuse. And that was his passion. That's what he spent, like I said, the last 54 years of his life doing. So he was the first black ace, a pitcher that won 20 games. And since he first done that 67 years ago, only 195 people have won 20 games or more. And was the first player to win MVP, Cy Young, and Rookie of the Year. And President Barack Obama also stated that Mr. Newcomb is someone who helped America become what it is, and that he would not be here today if it wasn't for the leadership of Jackie Robinson and that of Don Newcomb. So he was a powerful man both on and off the field, and I ask that we adjourn in his memory.
Thank you very much, Senator Bradford. Grateful that you came forward on that. Senator Glazer, would you like to be able to comment on this item? No. All right. Members, were anyone else on Mr. Newcomb? Senator Glazer, the floor is yours, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, many of you know my wife, Melba, and I'm sad to tell you today that her mother passed away a few days ago. Margarita Lafuente Muscarolas, we refer to her as Mima. She had a very interesting life. She left Cuba in 1956 with her husband, Martin, and nothing. Except for the clothes on her back. She carved out a new life in America, first in Miami, later moving to California, becoming a citizen, and living in Eagle Rock, raising five beautiful daughters, Miriam, Marilyn, Melba, Maritza, and Mirta. She was preceded in death by her husband, Martin, in addition to her wonderful daughters, son-in-laws Grant Abramson and Richard Lowe. She had four grandchildren, Ariel, Alex, Diego, and Emilio, who she adored and brought great love to her life. She was a kind and loving woman, great sense of humor, wonderful cook, and always had a sparkle in her deep blue eyes for that son-in-law who would say and do something a little silly. So with that, members, I thank you for adjourning in her wonderful memory. Mima, may she rest in peace.
Thank you so much, Senator Glazer, and cannot imagine the grief that the family is going through at this time, and please accept our condolences. Members, we would like to turn the floor over to Senator Grove. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. President. Members, many people know Bakersfield because of its many acres of orchards and vineyards, Buck Owens and Merle Haggard, Dwarves Ice Cream, Ice Milk, and their famous candy chews. But anyone who's lived in Bakersfield long enough also remembers Music's Transmission, founded, owned, and operated by my constituent, Harold Eugene Music, who passed away on Sunday, February 17th, weeks before his 86th birthday. Harold was born to Arthur and Pearl Music out of Childress, Texas, and was a child of the Dust Bowl days, surviving several life-threatening events before he eventually made his way to California, where he would spend the rest of his life as a businessman, providing jobs to our community and servicing most of Bakersfield's transmission work. He spent the rest of his life here in Bakersfield with the sweetheart and the love of his life, Lorraine, a marriage that lasted 68 wonderful years. Though they endured a lot of hardship and toil to realize the California dream, they also experienced abundance of joy, happiness, and pride. A persistent fisherman, and even a better storyteller with a joke every moment on his lips, Harold was also very serious at the times when he said that Lorraine was the catch of his life. Harold and Lorraine were hardly ever apart during the 7 decades that they jointly ran their business, raised their 4 children, Randy, Lori, Terry, and Dan, and they doted on their 18 grandchildren and their 39 great-grandchildren and still counting. He was also Uncle Harold to numerous nieces and nephews and boss to anyone who knew him or even worked at Music's Transmission and Precision Transmission Parts up until 1999. Beyond his family and business, Harold loved the Lord, and he served faithfully as a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in many capacities as a bishop, a missionary, a stake patriarch, and a temple sealer. He taught his posterity, and frankly anyone who would listen, the importance of loving and serving others through his consistent example of Christ-like charity. He often quoted one of his favorite scriptures from the Book of Mormon, "When we are in the service of our fellow beings, we are only in the service of God." He never ran into a stranger, and he had friends everywhere he went. He left a legacy of hard work, love for the Lord, his family, solidarity, and the community that he served all of his life. I send my condolences to the love of his life, Lorraine, and his incredible posterity as they lay him to rest this Sunday, and I ask the Senate to adjourn in his memory today.
Senator, thank you so much for advancing the adjournment memory, and please pass on our condolences. Senators, those are our adjournment memories for Thursday, the 21st of February. We'd like to be able to do announcements of committee. Madam Budget Chair, would you like to be able to announce the committee meeting?
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Members of the Budget and Fiscal Review Committee, we will commence today's budget hearing at 10 a.m. in room 4203. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Budget Chair. Members, without further ado, there is no other business. Pro Tem Atkins, the desk is clear.
Mr. President, thank you. Colleagues, thank you for a very productive week. We will reconvene on Monday at 2 p.m. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you, Madam Pro Tem. The Senate will be in recess until 3:30 p.m., at which time the adjournment motion will be made. We will reconvene Monday at 2 p.m. Budget Committee members, room 4203 at 10 a.m. Have a good weekend.